This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
And the three is away, no. Inside grab, and Kentucky is going to win it. The Wildcats are going to the Sweet 16. Now a date awaits them Friday in Indianapolis against their nemesis in the SEC, the Tennessee Volunteers.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. A lot of really fun games over the weekend. It's a pity that Illinois in Milwaukee couldn't get
really
a win.
Disappointing.
It was a big Illinois crowd.
They got a people, good draw.
They spent a lot of money to
big
get
fan.
Tickets to that game.
It was expensive to get in.
Yeah.
Dustin said it was $400 just to get in the door. Really?
Wow.
That seems exorbitant.
That seems insane.
That's crazy.
That seems like go to a sports bar and watch it.
Exactly.
And spend your $400.
Sell your ticket. You can buy a lot
you can
of
buy a lot of cheese with
wings and beer and cheese curds.
You're stuck in Milwaukee. Yeah.
It's a lot of cheese curds.
It's a lot
for $400.
Of summer sausage and cheese on the drive home.
Imagine the brats you could buy with $400.
A ton of brats.
Anyway, Illinois did not
fully
deliver. Here's what I was most disappointed on in Illinois. A couple things. Their failure to protect the basketball was just annoying.
Yes.
So
yes.
Frustrating. And they even came out, point of emphasis coming into the second half, you got to protect the basketball.
Right.
You can't turn the ball over. You got to stop beating yourself. Then what did they do first possession? Bad pass. Turnover.
They had 14 turnovers that led to 26 points.
That's how you lost the game.
That was it.
Kentucky did a better job of executing. They were more athletic, as Kendall Gill pointed out. They had that explosive athlete that Illinois lacks, and they just didn't. And I'll tell you my biggest disappointment. Coming in, and all season long, I've enjoyed watching Illinois for one major reason. I think that Yakushonis has been somebody who, as a freshman, intrigued me because I've heard that he was one and done, and you look at his NBA potential. And in the Big Ten, he had ups and downs and probably hit the rookie freshman wall. I wanted him to finish with a strong game, and he didn't.
Well, he will be available where the Bulls pick, if that's what you want. I think his stock dropped a little.
It did.
In that loss. And I mean, here was the problem with that game. Like, Illinois missed a lot of threes. They took a lot, but they missed a lot, and that's been a problem for them. The turnovers obviously lost them the game. But there was this sense that they weren't winning all of the loose balls. They weren't, like, nobody was getting floor burns.
It wasn't your typical Illinois effort.
They were there, but they didn't. It was like they weren't really as energized as I really anticipated they would be. We talked about it when the tournament began. No clue what to expect from Illinois, because we've seen, like, when they went out of the Big Ten tournament, that was a bad loss. And so you weren't sure how they were going to turn up. I'm glad they won the first game. The Big Ten did great. 8-0 against the spread. Always good to see that kind of thing. But, man, they just didn't have it in that game.
Rarely do you say something like that. Your observation is interesting, because rarely do you say that a Brad Underwood team doesn't show that kind of effort or hustle. Well, they weren't getting to every loose ball the way you expected them to.
It's weird.
Maybe because I think Kentucky had superior athleticism.
Yeah.
They just were quicker, stronger, and they were harder to stop. Yeah. You look at Illinois, and they couldn't get, besides Boswell, I don't think that there was a player on that floor that you felt like could get you a bucket when you needed it.
So with Illinois gone, what is our biggest Chicago connection?
Duke.
Because of John Shire.
No doubt. White Mike. I think John Shire, the way that Pat Beverly, that's Pat Beverly's way of referring to him, not me.
Talked about, he was the
same
age
as him,
and he was playing all over the city.
Yeah. Exactly. And that was respect.
Yes.
He was saying that with respect. And I think it's easy to respect John Shire, high school legend, college national champion, head coach, successor of Coach K. How do you describe him as a coach? Well, he could be national champion head coach by the end of the month, beginning of next month.
He should be. I mean, that team is loaded. That team, you know, their conference is eliminated. But they have probably four NBA players. They could have a completely different roster next year, because they could be loading up in the NBA, frankly. That is a really good combination of players. And you know, he's just a really good dude, and he's a very emotional dude. Let's take a listen to John Shire in the postgame.
You know, Tyrese, I took over in April, and Tyrese and I had a call May 31st to come a year early, and I think we knew there'd be some rough patches, you know, reclassifying, but there were his first year, but he had some big time moments. Like, he came on strong down the stretch, and he could have made a decision to even go pro after his freshman year, a year early. And I think he and his family, his, you know, mom and dad, they had such maturity to understand it's more important to be ready than just be drafted. And so he doubles down, comes back, huge expectations. And me and Tyrese both would say his sophomore year didn't go the way we wanted. And I think that's where it's easy to split. And I was not in a convincing mode, I think, after that season. I was just matter of fact, where I saw it for him and the opportunity, and just we had honest conversations like we always do. But I think the difference is for a guy in that position to take it, as opposed to making excuses or running away from it, I think that's the special part. And so for this to happen for Tyrese, you know, to be, you know, hitting 7 threes and to be our key guy and all that after going through all these moments, like if I'm an NBA team, I'm going after him, because you have to handle adversity. And I think that speaks a lot to his character. And then obviously our relationship, you know, and I think in this era, you guys cover this, you understand the challenges and NIL and transfer portal and all that. It's still to have the relationships you can build with a guy for 3 years and go through a lot. Man, I'm obviously really proud of him.
So that's John Shire, the head coach at Duke, talking about Tyrese Proctor, who made 9 of 10 field goals in that game, 7 of 8 three-pointers. He now has a school record of 13 trays in 2 games. He had 6 against Mount St. Mary's.
Yep.
And he's the first Duke player to get at least 5 threes in a game since Shire did it on the way to a championship in 2010.
In 2010, yes.
Is that unbelievable?
It is unbelievable.
And he's so emotional talking about the kid.
The symmetry of not only – I think reading into that and knowing the background of it,
yes,
it wasn't that John Shire's seeing himself on the floor. It's more that when he took over
– yes –
he had a conversation with Proctor a month after he got the job, succeeding Coach K. This guy's been there every step of the way.
Yes.
He has been there through the struggles that I think John Shire naturally probably went through trying to be his own coach, establish his own program, and carve out that identity, which is very difficult in the shadow of Mike Krzyzewski. So Tyrese Proctor excelling at this level as John Shire is becoming his own head coach has got to be emotional, and I think you heard it in that moment, which was really special, because Proctor is one of several guys on that team that they're going to have their moment. They're capable of having that big day where he is the guy. And so this Duke team, Duke has gone full circle in my mind from being the team that is, you know, perennially, traditionally hard to pull for because they're the blue blood that nobody really fully likes, America likes to kind of reject, to being really fun and likable and happy. And it's a... obviously provincial, but John Shire is an easy guy to root for.
I totally agree with you, and I think you're right about why he got so emotional talking about that player. You know, John Shire, when he hit the back-to-back, that was in like the Elite Eight, and I think maybe the Final Four, or maybe it was the Sweet 16 in the Elite Eight. But this kid opens the tournament knocking down threes like crazy. I mean, he could be the first guy to do it three times in a row.
Well,
and he could do it for six games, for God's sake, on the way to a title.
They could.
It's incredible how good that team is.
They've got a tough challenge. Arizona will be athletically a good challenge, but I think the Duke's a better basketball team. You know, Arizona comes back and rallies to beat Oregon, Big Ten's own Oregon. I don't think of them as a Big Ten team yet either. It's kind of hard to think of them in those terms. But Arizona and Duke will be a good athletic matchup, but I think Duke's a better basketball team.
Deeper,
and they have several guys they could rely upon. If one's not having a big night, you trust that the other one or two or three could.
I would love to see a Duke-Alabama game for the Final Four. It'd be great. Just be fun, given the whole season and what we've watched. You know, Duke, as good as they've been, Alabama has been right there. Top of the
that's the way it's shaping up.
Year.
Duke and Alabama are on a collision course to meet. That would be next. Let's see, the 28th.
It's Duke, Alabama. It's Houston, Tennessee. It's Florida.
It'd be Saturday. Duke and Alabama would be Saturday, I believe.
Okay,
Saturday night, and it would definitely be the second game.
And then it's for sure Michigan, Michigan State. What?
Thursday's going to be really difficult if you love college basketball.
It's going to be fun.
Because the Cubs also open.
Thursday is an unbelievable sports day.
It is.
And aren't the Lakers in town playing the Bulls Thursday
LeBron and
night?
Luka. LeBron and Luka Saturday or Thursday night at the UC.
I mean, they should talk about a night where you need to get out and get multiple TVs in front of your
face. Do we need Bronny instead of LeBron?
Yes.
Does Bronny not travel?
If Bronny would have played Saturday night instead of LeBron, they might have beaten the Bulls.
He could have gotten those 17 points.
They wouldn't have lost by 31.
They'd only lost by 28.
Exactly. He'd have been a much better scoring option. LeBron was rusty. And Luka was nasty. You see him shove Josh Giddey out of the way?
Oh, yeah.
What's that all about? Come on, Luka. What's that all about?
You know, he doesn't like people on walkabout. It's as simple as that.
Did you see that, Brandon? What was that? What was the purpose of that?
That's the thing that they say about Luka, though. Like, he gets testy.
He's dirty.
Then he complains to the refs.
Yeah,
he
was complaining to the refs.
And after he pushed Giddey, which is
Giddey was in his way, then he was complaining still. Like, how dare you interrupt me?
There's a nasty there.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Especially when he's playing as high of a level as he's playing at.
Apparently the nasty includes his diet.
Is Giddey warming up to you guys? Like, would you pay Giddey?
Yes.
Giddey is, I've always been.
I'm coming around.
Okay. I'm sold, yeah. Pay him.
I thought at the beginning of the year, we cautioned about $30 million a year being a bit high. And it still might be a bit high. But I've always said this, to the chagrin of many.
Yes.
Those weren't empty calories necessarily. Josh Giddey having triple doubles meant something. He's progressing. He's improving.
Yes.
He's adjusting.
Yes.
Billy Donovan is making him a better player.
Yeah.
I think you got to keep him.
Oh, they have to keep him.
You got to keep him.
Yeah, they don't have a lot. They have to keep him. And I'm with you. I started the year questioning whether I would keep the guy. But as the year has gone on, as he's had this kind of, you've seen elements of his game.
He's 22.
And he's a young man.
He's 22.
Right.
Matas, Giddey, Coby White, Derek Queen. Goodness sakes.
Young Moses Malone, yes.
Young Moses.
Can you imagine that?
Can you believe that he said that? Yeah, I mean, you have no idea.
Once he said that, his draft stock went up again.
See, that's the problem.
Molly's got one player now. He's going to watch the rest of the tournament and for the draft.
I hold the guy in. Moses Malone, I'm
saying. I know. And well, now it's going to be Derek Queen. I love the comp.
Like I said, Moses belongs with the greats. He was that good. He just played too long. It's almost like, you know, we had those Shaq in with the Celtics years where you just kind of like, oh, yeah.
Stop. Do you believe that players, not yes or no, how much do you think players like Derek Queen, like Walter Clayton Jr., can improve their draft stock in the NCAA tournament?
It happens every year. We see it every year. It definitely happens. There are guys that you don't think are NBA that end up having a good tournament.
Is that dangerous?
It is dangerous.
Because
who was the guy? Well, I can't remember what school he played. Was it John Bagley? You remember that one?
Wow.
Seriously.
That's going way back. Boston College.
Well, I'm saying, but he got drafted out of that performance, and he was not an NBA player.
There are other examples, I'm sure.
But I'm using Bagley now.
No, that's good. But I think that when you talk about a 3 to 4 game sample size that can outweigh 3 to 4 previous months. So if you are questionable as a draft prospect, you go into the tournament and you raise the level of your play in March Madness, I think that you can convince some NBA scouts that you're worth an executive, worth more than you were during the regular season. It can be a dangerous risk, though.
Oh, it can be. No question. Especially if a guy kind of, you know, exceeds, you know, if you overdraft a guy, you got a problem. But I think Queen is going to be a good, I think
he's got an NBA body.
He's going to be a good rank and file NBA player with a chance to be special.
And that competitiveness is
what Kendall talked about.
Moses Malone is like really high ceiling praise. I wonder Wendell Carter Jr.
Ew.
I know you. That's an ew.
Not Wendell Carter Jr. No.
And are his parents going to get involved?
What? Stop.
Oh. If he's Wendell Carter Jr., I'm passing.
Okay, but he's...
Trade him to Orlando.
Well, I know, but I mean, if you think about it.
Wendell Carter Jr. is not a bad...
He's okay. He's a rotation player.
He didn't lead a team to the promised land.
The only thing they have in common is that they both played in the NBA.
His floor Wendell Carter Jr.?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Ugh. Well, rank and file NBA player.
You said rank and file.
That's fair.
So worst case, he's a rotational big.
But you just put me off him.
Yeah, now I'm done.
We're having a conversation. It's a rhetorical question. See, that's the thing. Rhetorical questions aren't statements. I'm not saying he's going to be Wendell Carter Jr. I'm asking for help here. Let's have a conversation. Who's he going to be? Who can he be?
From the Rockets.
If you can keep this up, then he's definitely going to be there for the Bulls.
I know. Keep saying that he's Wendell Carter Jr.
Get Kendall to say that.
Right now, I just saw it. Tankathon got him dropped down to the 13th pick. I see it right here. So the Bulls could get him. So there we go. Thank you.
Why? Why is he dropping?
I mean, right first, he was actually 15th. He actually went up a few spots.
Oh, okay.
My fear with the Bulls, and it just became more exaggerated or obvious to me yesterday, a player that I was high on coming into the tournament, I'm less high on now, but Kaspers Jakusconis is a guy that you thought could be. He's going to be a lottery pick.
He might need another year in college.
I don't think
being
he's
cruel about it.
I don't
it.
Think
I'm
he's going to do it, though. I think he's probably going to come out.
Well, I mean, if you're making some money and you're down at the U of I, that's a fun place.
Lithuanian point guard.
Oh,
You've got AK. I'm just saying he must. I bet he likes his game.
At some point.
Drafting ninth.
You got to limit the number of Lithuanian players.
And with the number 9 overall pick, the Chicago Bulls select.
Oh, no.
Tie-dye t-shirts.
Kaspers Jakusconis.
Such a Bulls
sport. A 708er just sent in the text of the day. As long as he's not Patrick Williams.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's a good. Yeah.
There's that.
The bigger.
Thanks for ruining my day.
The big mistake was drafting Patrick Williams fourth. The bigger mistake was giving him a $90 million contract.
Right. You just put an exclamation point on a bad pick.
Yeah. That's a tough thing to overcome. And that does give you some pause and doubt when going into this draft, regardless of where the Bulls pick. But if they end up with Derek Queen, wow.
Someone can we say his floor is like Patrick Williams and he'll drop a little more? So we can definitely get him?
This is a good comment here. We were talking about guys who were overdrafted because of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
How about Tyrus Thomas? Didn't he have a great – he was real bouncy for
– yeah.
Was it LSU?
He had a bouncy
month.
And he
was just Mr. Bouncy, and you thought he was making some progress, and they drafted him, and Patrick
Williams. They could have had LaMarcus Aldridge that year, too.
Yes. Didn't they take him and trade him?
Yeah, they took him and traded him for Tyrus Thomas.
Yeah. Oh, man. Thank you, Brandon, for ruining my day.
Walter Clayton Jr. would be a duplicate part on the Bulls team, but he's going to make somebody very happy, whoever drafts him, because I think he's going to be – Walter Clayton Jr. looks like a pretty good pro. Would you agree with that, Brandon?
No, I'm with you there. Okay. I'm with you there.
All right. Whew. Speaking of pretty good pros, Biggs Time is next.
Did you see his mock draft?
I did see his mock
draft. We need to talk about his mock draft.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. I'm having a hard time with a lot of these mocks. I just think – and again, that's 1.0, Big Z. We'll see if that shifts and change, but we'll get a chance to talk to him next. We love our guy Big Z, and we'll get him on here. Big's Time next. Mully, you know on the score.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
The Brand Biggs. Big's Time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Big's Time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Big's Time.
Big Z.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, longtime contributor to the station and a valued and well-loved friend, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you're very popular, and like you have a texter saying quite literally, I laugh out loud every time you play the Robot Biggs, and you know, compliments on everything you do. Can you ask Biggsy what happened to his Missouri Tigers in the NCAA tournament? People know too much about you.
Yeah, they were bad the last couple of weeks. I watched a couple minutes of the game. That was it. They were so bad looking at the finish line this season that had no expectations. But to go from winless in the SEC a year ago to making the tournament, that's fine. We'll move on.
We will move on. So Brad, obviously we're reading your draft and we're going over 1.0. And let's be honest about it. The reality is that's your first bite at the apple, right? How many drafts will you do? You will do one right before the draft in April. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a couple more, at least two more probably on. Yeah, I mean, one guy texts me, he's like, hey, you get, is this based on something you know?
You know stuff, like, Brad? That mean you know stuff?
I'm like, blind guess, bro. Blind guess.
But, Brad, I think it's interesting, though, because you have Will Campbell going to the Bears at 10. And I'm curious, like, based on the people you talk to around the league, is there a building consensus that the first tackle off the board will be Armon Membu from Missouri because of the way he tested and just because of how he has begun to rise?
I think there's a couple factors that go in there. Like Membu, I don't think you can play him at left tackle.
Right.
I don't think you'd probably want to try. Like, I remember talking to people about him back in, late September, early October. They liked him. They wanted to look at him some more. They thought he might be a guard. Now, I think people feel pretty good about him playing right tackle. But I think it depends a little bit what you need. Like, if you need two tackles, yeah, you could take him and plug him in there. But he's popular right now, and you know, as one GM told me at the combine, he said that offensive linemen in the draft in round one aren't much different than quarterbacks from the standpoint that they get overdrafted because everybody needs them. Like of the 32 teams right now, how many are sitting there and they're saying, "Oh yeah, we're good on the O-line." Like that's a small handful of teams going into the draft every year, whether they actively try to get one in the first couple rounds. You know, that's not always the case, but everybody is always hunting offensive linemen.
Yeah, there's truth in that, and the Bears could, you know, obviously you want them to keep going. I wonder, is it fair to ask if Will Campbell can play left tackle in the NFL?
I mean, that's a good question, and it's a fair question, and people have said, well, what about the arm length? And
right,
fair question, right? But boy, you watch him do it at LSU, and it sure looks like he can do it, right? You're not projecting a guy from a small conference that played, had a big game against Mississippi State, and then they played, Rutgers, and those were the two big teams on the schedule that they put. This is a guy who played at an elite level for a while. He's not a one-year starter. So I think if you're drafting him, chances are you're starting him at left tackle and you see what it looks like anyway, right?
Right. You would have to do that if you take him at 10.
And it's like in a lot of these people that talk about, his arm length is an issue, are ignoring the fact that there's been some pretty damn good linemen with shorter arms than you would like that have played left tackle in the last, 20 or 30 years in the NFL.
I tend to agree with that, Brad. I think it's an interesting choice, and if he fell to them, they'd be lucky probably to draft him. I also wonder this. In your mock draft, you have Ashton Jeanty going 12 to the Cowboys. How difficult, if that is indeed the case, would it be in your mind, based on who you've talked to, for Ben Johnson to pass on a running back that would give him a dynamic weapon in the backfield?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to know how Ben Johnson feels about Jeanty or his desire to build up that position, but that's got to come down to a number of factors. One, how special is this guy? There's a little bit of recency bias here because, folks are, this is the greatest running back that's come along in a long, long time. He's a really good player. There's no question about that. I would think the loud and proud crowd that wanted them to focus on the offensive line in the offseason would probably want them to stick with that in the draft, right?
Yep.
Or do we have some flip meet flop where they're going to change their tune, and then if the line isn't fixed for the long haul, they're going to be back again saying these people were idiots that everybody knew they needed to fix the line, because Drew Dolman looks like a guy who can take care of your center position for this season and hopefully quite a while to come. Tooney, that's a shorter term fix,
yes.
And Jonah Jackson, they've got a lot of faith in, and if you're believing in the coach, you're trusting him there. But he needs to bounce back, and you've got the question mark at left tackle. So you can't go wrong continuing to build the line. The Lions didn't get their fancy toy at the running back position until they had, really built up the structure and the backbone of that roster.
That's a good way of putting it. And I, as I have said many times, I have no problem drafting line of scrimmage at number 10 at 39, at 41. And maybe not all offensive linemen, but there are two sides to the line of scrimmage. I know they've improved through free agency, but I don't believe they're done there either.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that gets lost in this discussion about Jeanty at 10 that I think you know, some people just kind of ignore it. It's a fantastic draft for running backs. It's not a good draft for running backs. It's a great draft. So that being said, like, are you at the point in your program where you can take a running back 10th overall, where you can draft a running back in the first round for the first time since Cedric Benson, which was 2 decades ago? Are they at that point in their program? I don't know that a foray in the free agency, understanding that they've got some players with really strong track records, high marks on the field, in the locker room, but we tend to get kind of blinded by some of these moves in free agency where we expect them in March and April to be more impactful than they wind up being in October and in November. So are they at that point where they can pull the trigger on a running back that high in the draft?
Brad, I love the top 10, but very curious. But same question kind of applies to Tyler Warren, who you have going 7 to the Jets. That's very high for a tight end unless you're convinced that he's one of these guys that makes your offense instantly dangerous.
Yeah, I think Tyler Warren's interesting because he can impact every down, right? Like he's fantastic in the passing game. He's going to do everything he's called upon and more in the running game. I mean, he's a guy you can't dismiss from any conversation about the Bears at number 10, right? Because he's that total package at the tight end position, which I think is kind of, you know, what the Bears like. I think they'll get away from, you know, going for this one-dimensional guy, a Jimmy Graham type, a Gerald Everett, guys of that type. I think they're looking for players that can do it all. And, you know, I don't know what the chances are would be for him, but you'd need to have a conversation about him at 10. I think he's a really good player. Hmm.
You know, I mean, and I don't think it's for 10, but whoever winds up with Omarion Hampton, it's like you're drafting Derrick Henry. I mean, you see the size of this guy and the athletic ability and the strength. I mean, he's like a man.
Wow. Yeah, he probably goes round one.
Yes.
That's your second running back that's taken. And, you know, maybe the Bears are looking at him in a scenario and where there's a trade down.
Right.
I think they probably need to resist the urge to trade up with these three. You're in a really good spot right here.
You don't want to trade up, right? Picks.
Yeah. Well, you got three picks in the top 41.
Yes.
Just you know, be confident in the process you've put in place to stack your draft board, right, and arrange it. And then attack it, right? And then go get it, and keep your draft capital where it's at.
Brad, I just wonder if you're attaching any significance to the fact that Ben Johnson shows up at a Hawks game and they score a touchdown and win 7-4.
He did.
Instant offense.
The Hawks are totally irrelevant, brother.
Nice.
They're just completely irrelevant.
Excellent.
They won yesterday, Brad. Bedard's hot.
Win, lose, or draw, they are irrelevant.
Ben Johnson begs to differ, and he was there. All right, good stuff, Biggsy.
Yeah.
Love the mock draft.
Good talking to you, buddy. The mock draft is tons of fun. I wonder if more quarterbacks will be taken than you imagine. You know, there's a lot of talk about Jackson Dart moving up. You know, no one would have picked Denver to jump in and take their quarterback, and it happened. And I think there could be a run on the bank, as we always know. Everybody needs a quarterback.
The Steelers need to get involved somehow because they're still trying to move on from Ben Roethlisberger, and maybe Aaron Rodgers lands there. But even if Rodgers does, you've got to
there is next
year.
You've
got to come up with a solution for that position.
There's always a year after you get a 40-year-old quarterback. Great stuff, Big Z.
See you, Brad.
If Rodgers goes to the Steelers, the Bears do have Pittsburgh on the schedule this season.
Yeah, they come to town, I believe.
And have a great day, guys.
All right,
he owns
them.
He owns them.
Well, he may not own them
anymore.
Not with that group. Maybe.
Maybe just.
He'll make the Steelers better if he goes there.
He would.
He would make the Steelers definitely feel like they have a chance to return to the playoffs.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
The schedule's the schedule. I mean, we can, I think you can look at it and say that, but it doesn't help us to do that, really. We got to go play the games, and, you know, we got to live with the results, and there's going to be a game the next day that no matter who you're playing or who's pitching, that you're going to try to, we're going to try to win that game, so... The great thing about the schedule now is it really is the same for everybody, and that's, you're playing the same. Yeah, and when you play teams, you got no control over and who's hurt and all that stuff, but the schedule's the same for everybody now, and I think that's a good thing.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Craig Counsell, the Cubs manager, talking about what it's like getting back from Japan, which is, I believe, unmentionable. We're not supposed to talk about it.
It's mentionable. He talked about it. I understand why he's asked about it. We're going to ask him about it. He's going to have to address it again. My point in going on a little bit of an explanation earlier, I'll keep it with explanation. I'll avoid the term rant.
Okay.
Was that you don't want that to become a crutch. Or you fear that becoming the reason why the Cubs get off to a bad start, and you don't want them to speak it into existence. That's all.
Text on the text line. Guys, I've been going to Japan once a quarter for the last 15 years. Upon return, it takes 4 to 7 days to normalize. Jet lag is the worst on the second day when you get back.
Okay, we're past the second day.
Okay.
These are professional baseball players, and I know that they haven't been going every quarter. Really appreciate the feedback. I don't know what it's... I've gone to Japan once, but I wasn't coming back to play in a regular season.
But did you have a jet lag issue when you came
back? Of course.
Back? You did?
Of course.
When you went to see Sawahara Oh.
Yes, I did go to see Sawahara Oh.
And you got home and you were lost in translation.
I was a little lost in translation, and I could have used some of his strong coffee that he served me because it was a little sleepy. Coming back. And it lingers for a couple days. But I don't want that to be the Cubs' crutch.
Yes. Yes. They can't.
Do you think the Dodgers are worried about jet lag?
No, I think they got more players.
Okay. And if they are worried about jet lag, they will go out and buy some jet lag expert to talk them out of it, or just put them on some nutritional plan or whatever, some sleep expert. They will get by it. They will get past it. They won't use it as a crutch, and neither should the Cubs.
So I stepped out of the studio during the break, and you look totally different.
I have different headphones. They're just broken headphones. Thanks for bringing attention to the headphones.
It kind of stunned me because you're now
wearing
white
headphones. These are the kind of things you don't have to bring attention
with
to.
With a red wire. It's just more colorful than ever before.
I don't think you need to bring attention to these things. These are just things that are in the context of a normal day.
I beg your pardon.
You just have equipment issues.
Okay. I didn't know what was going on.
That's all right.
But where did you get those?
Are they distracting?
They're very beautiful.
If they're distracting I could try to change.
I feel like we need to be synchronized. Dustin,
all of a sudden,
can I get some white and red?
All of a sudden, before Biggs, my headphones went out.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Kind of like
that.
A car that stops working.
Was it still in one ear or something? Or
no, it was dead.
Really?
I just told it wouldn't turn over. Suddenly, I had no Biggs, not even robot Biggs. No, no real Biggs, no robot Biggs,
morning,
no Biggs.
What's going on?
There he is.
It was glorious. Really?
Oh, you're so mean to Biggs. What is it with you two? And then we got some guy texting in that I sound like an instigator.
You do kind of instigate.
How do I instigate?
You like to instigate, Brad, now. We don't need much instigation, but you do like to play that role. That's okay. You're like, hey, do you know what he said? You know what your friend said about you and what he said about him? And
really?
Then you kind of sit back and you laugh.
I think that's unfair. You're the one who texted that in.
I did not. I was too busy worrying about fixing my headphones.
The guy accuses me of trying to start a bar fight and then eating peanuts and laughing while it goes on. That's very unfair.
Biggs and I have a good back and forth. You know, the thing with him in hockey, I don't understand.
Oh, he really, I mean, he literally shut you down and just, that was game over. It was, his cruelty to you today was just.
It was uncalled for.
It was
uncalled
totally
for.
Out of line.
He didn't realize I was dealing with an equipment issue.
No.
He didn't realize that I was playing impaired, and he still kind of brought it to me. But nonetheless, the Cubs are in a position to, with their schedule,
they need
a fast start.
They need to come right out of the gate. They need to hit. They need to do the things that they failed to do in Japan. They need to knock in runs. We like the worst case scenario is similar performance and then coming back to Chicago in a hole. They're already down two games. I know it doesn't matter. I know it's a short season. I know they played the best team in baseball. But, you know, you got to come out of the gate. You got to be ready to play.
You do. And I maintain that it wasn't that they lost. It was how they lost.
Yes, I agree with you.
And
it was a repeat of last year.
Going
0-2, familiar.
It would have been acceptable if they would not have been struggling to hit.
With runners in scoring position.
1-for-7 in game two. They were 0-for-3. They managed 3 hits overall. And it's just one of those things that reminded you too much of last season. And you want them to be different this year offensively. Until it doesn't happen, I'm going to always wonder what Crow Armstrong is going to look like when they finally do put him at the top of the order.
Yeah, Ian Happ's going to lead off. They announced that the other day.
You're going to need a catalyst, and I just don't know if that's going to work for long.
Happer had a good series, though.
Okay.
In the first Japan series?
I think they're going to juggle the lineup. And King Tuck has got to get off to a good start.
Yes, or you lose that trade.
Well, you know who would know about this? Bruce would be the good one to ask.
We will bring in Bruce.
You got him losing the trade already.
You're the one who asked that question. I asked the question last week if they tried to trade the wrong star, and that had no ground. And we come back with another one, and it's the same question.
Wow. Bruce is next.
You know, it's a scary good question, right?
And we will frighten him next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.